देवी सरस्वती व्यासम् तोजयो मुदिरये नष्टप्रायेष्वनुद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी. Continuing our study of the 11th canto, 28th chapter, today's verse is number 20.
Vijnanam etat yavastamanga
Vijnanam etat yavastamanga
Gunatayam karana karya katri
Gunatayam karana karya
Samanvayena vyatirekatascha
Samanvayena vyatirekatascha
Vinaiva triyena tadeva satyam
Vinaiva triyena tadeva satyam
Vidyanam
Vidyanam
The mind whose symptom is full knowledge.
Etat
This
Tri
Avastam
existing in three conditions.
Wakeful consciousness. Sleep.
And deep sleep.
Anga.
My
dear Uddhava.
Gunatrayam.
Manifesting through the three modes of nature.
Karana.
As the subtle cause, Adhyatma,
Karya,
the gross product,
Adhibhuta,
Kartri,
and the
producer,
Adhidaiva,
Samanvayena,
in each of them,
one after another.
Vyatirekata,
as separate.
Cha,
and
Yena,
by which,
Eva,
indeed,
Turiena,
fourth factor,
that,
Eva,
alone,
Satyam,
is the absolute truth.
Translation
by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. The material mind manifests in three phases of consciousness: wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep, which are products of the three modes of nature. The mind further appears in three different roles: the perceiver, the perceived, and the regulator of perception. Thus, the mind is manifested variously throughout these threefold designations. But it is a fourth factor, existing separately from all this, that alone constitutes the absolute truth. Purport. As stated in the Katha Upanishad 2.2.15, Tam eva mantam anubhati sarvam tasya vasa sarvam idam dimati. Everything radiates its illumination in pursuance of his original illumination. His light illuminates everything in this universe. As thus described, the entire range of perception, cognition, and sensitivity is an insignificant expansion of the perception, cognition, and sensitivity of the personality of Godhead. Om Jnan Tiramdasya Vyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukham karoti vachanam pangum langayate girim yat kripa tamaham bhagde si jurundi natayinam vanchakarpatarubhyascha upasindubhyeva cha
patitanam pavanebhyo
vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.
Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vidyanamita Triyavastamanga Gunatayam Karana Karya Karti Samanvayena Vyatirekatashchaya Neva Turiyena Tadeva Satyam.
It is said that in the spiritual world every word is a song. So the Gita, the Bhagavatam, Krishna is singing. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God, right? Every word is a song. So when you communicate, you sing. You communicate by singing. How lovely is that? Is that lovely? Is that sweet? What's the difference between singing and speaking? What would you think is the difference? Yeah?
Melody.
The mellow.
Melody.
Oh, the melody. Well, that's true. There's a melody. There's a melody. Also, when you sing, you put more energy into it. And you sing from the heart. We don't always speak from the heart. But we sing from the heart. Every word is a song. Every step is a dance. Bharatanatyam. You've seen Bharatanatyam? That's the way Lord Shiva walks. That dancing is the way Lord Shiva walks. How many people have seen Odissi dance? That's the way Krishna walks. Threefold bending form. So these dances is the way people move from place to place in the spiritual world. Not like us. Every word is a song. Every step is a dance. Every thought is a thought of love. Every thought is a loving thought. Here we have different kinds of thoughts. If we have a loving thought, we consider it quite wonderful. Most of our thoughts aren't loving. And in the spiritual world, every thought is a loving thought, full of love. And every act is a devotional act, an act of devotion. Here, we may be acting out of greed, out of anger, out of lording it over. So the whole mood of the spiritual realm is completely different than here. Because here, the three phases of consciousness are products of the three modes of material nature. And thus, we're conditioned by these modes. So if I become influenced by the mode of ignorance, then I speak and act in the mode of ignorance. My words will be like daggers in someone's heart, for example. Now in the spiritual world, it's different. Here, we'll say something out of envy or out of anger to hurt somebody. Sometimes we do it consciously. We don't like somebody and we're going to let them know. And we call that being honest.
Just see how we've twisted everything. Well, I don't want to fake it. There's a very nice story. Many, many years ago, 1968, Upendra, our glorious godbrother Upendra, was Prabhupada's servant. And one day he came to Srila Prabhupada and said, "Srila Prabhupada, I can't offer obeisances to some of my godbrothers. I'm not going to mention the name, but there was one godbrother that he just didn't get on with." And he said, I can't offer obeisances to this person. Because if I did, I would be a complete hypocrite. Has anybody ever felt that way? Well, you don't know what I'm going to say. But anyway, so then Prabhupada said, when you offer obeisances, when you don't want to offer obeisances, that's real obeisances. That's genuine obeisances. When you don't want to do it, and you do it, that's real obeisances. That's real humility. That's real forgiveness. That's not carrying a grudge with you. That's not being a hypocrite. That's being advanced in devotional service. And not seeing fault, but trying to see something good in someone else. That's coming out of the modes of ignorance. That's called transcendence. Transcendental mood. Sometimes people ask me, how did I come to join this movement? Well, I came in the Association of the Devotees in 1972 and started coming to the temple and getting Prabhupada's books, hearing Prabhupada's lectures, met Prabhupada in 73. But I was already on the path of yoga since 1968. I met some Bengali Indians who invited me to their home, and I took prasad, and they invited me to their temple, and I heard kirtan for the first time, Hare Krishna mantra. And, you know, that's a long story, but just to make it long story short. Then I started reading books on yoga, but somehow or other I was reading the wrong books. I was reading all Mayavadi books. So then 1969, when I first saw the devotees on the street, then I remembered, oh, these are the Vaishnavas that Mr. Sengupta told me about. Mr. Sengupta, he had told me about these people who shave their heads and they go in the streets chanting, wearing robes. He said, those are Vaishnavas. It's the first time I ever heard the word Vaishnava, but somehow it stuck with me. So when I saw the devotees about, you know, maybe 9 months later, I thought, oh, these are the Vaishnavas that Mr. Sengupta told me about. So they gave me a magazine, I thanked them, and I went home. And I couldn't understand a word what Prabhupada was saying because I was used to a different concept. The Vaishnava concept and the Vaishnava words Prabhupada was using, I wasn't familiar with. I was a Mayavadi. And I got more and more, in this one sense I was a Mayavadi, but in another sense I wasn't. Because some of my friends who were real Mayavadis, I didn't agree with their philosophy. We're all God. Really? Well, how come I don't know that I'm God? Well, it's like this. Have you ever had this experience? Sometimes you're looking for something, you look in this pocket, you look here, you look there, you can't remember. Where is it? Finally, you remember, you find it. It's like that. I said, really? Well, what power is it that so powerful can make God forget? I can't answer that. They could never answer that. So even though I was reading these Mayavadi books and becoming familiar with their philosophy, on the other side, I didn't really believe it. But I was being conditioned in that way. I wanted to raise the Kundalini and experience enlightenment. So that was in Canada, and then subsequently in 1970 I went to London, where I was born. So I went back to my birthplace. And there I got into different, you know, I would go to different groups. I was always going to different groups trying to find my path. I came across one Swami, Narayan Ananda Swami, who was teaching Kundalini Yoga. And I was thinking, this is great. I want to raise the Kundalini through the different chakras and experience enlightenment. And I was on a very strict diet in those days. I only ate goat's milk and dates. I would put a date in my mouth, take a little swig of goat's milk, chew them together, get my sleep day. So that was my diet for months at a time. And then I met the devotees and became friendly. And one day they took me to the temple. And when they offered me that prasadam, I looked at that opulent rich prasadam. I said, no way. I was just taking goat's milk and dates. You know, I couldn't eat all that. When they were doing kirtan, it was nothing like the kirtan I had heard from the Indian community. You know, which was very melodious, expert with danga playing and everything, and the devotees were just banging around. The very first time I went to the temple, they brought me the evening, and it was the evening arti. And in those days, in every temple in ISKCON, before the Sundar arti, they would have Tulsi arti. Do you still do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I came there, it was Tulsi Arti. And devotees were dancing around the tree, around Tulsi. I thought, okay, this is a little different. Never seen this before. So, but I became attracted to the devotees. Battery is dead. I became attracted to the devotees. Because they were very friendly. And they did something that I never saw in any other group. They were always offering obeisances to us. And in all the books that I had studied, one of the main tenets was that when you have real knowledge, it's exhibited by your humility. And I saw these devotees always offering obeisances to each other, you know. Hundreds of times a day, please accept my humble obeisances. And I thought, wow, these people, they really have humility. They must have knowledge. Then there was one of my devotee friends. There was one guru from another ashram, from another, and who suggested, let's go hear what he has to say. So we went, and he spoke. And then after he spoke, he asked for questions. And my friend asked this question. Well, not a question, made a request. Could you speak about death? So he was taken aback. Death? Why should we speak about death? Let's speak about life. Life is wonderful. Death is horrible. Like this. So after when we left, my devotee friend said, the whole purpose of life is that when you reach the time of death, it's like the final exam. And we have to, our consciousness determines our next birth. Where we go, our home destination. We didn't know anything. So that was an eye-opener. So, I became a devotee over time, gradually. And because I was doing Kundalini Yoga, And then Narayanananda Swami had this book, and I was practicing all the different, you know, yama, niyama, pratyahara, pranayama, all these things. Then at the end of the book, right at the very end, he writes, there are other methods to raise the kundalini. One of the other methods was kirtan. I thought, why am I doing all these exercises? Let me just go to Hare Krishna and do kirtan and get the same result. And that's what happens. That was the end of kundalini yoga. Bhakti yoga. And then gradually I became purified because I still couldn't understand how Krishna was God. Now I was already following the principles because every yogi follows the principles. But then one, because I was associating with the devotees, hearing Prabhupada speak, hadn't met him yet, but on the tapes, and hearing the Maha Mantra, and gradually starting to take some prasad, and changing my diet to a prasad diet. One day, the light went on, and I understood. Just like that. And I realized later on, it wasn't my power of understanding. Because all of a sudden, it just came to me. How did it just come to me? Because Paramatma gave that knowledge. Sarvasya chahamriti sannivishto matasmritir jnanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes knowledge. From me comes remembrance, and from me comes forgetfulness. So there's three shaktis that Krishna utilizes from within our heart. The Gyan Shakti, the Smriti Shakti, and the Apohan Shakti. So the mind appears in three different roles here. The perceiver, the perceived, and the regulator of perception. And Krishna is the regulator of perception. And what we perceive is due to our desires, due to our mentality. So if we're inclined towards spiritual life and we want to know, is there a God? What is God? How do I meet God? What is the goal of life? Why am I here? Where did I come from? What is my purpose here? What happens after death? When Krishna sees that we're asking these questions, he guides us to a Vaishnava. And then our questions become answered. We gain some knowledge. Krishna gives us some understanding and some memory, some remembrance that we're actually his eternal servants, pure spirit soul. So that Smriti Shakti becomes manifest and the Gyan Shakti becomes manifest. But Krishna also has the Apohan Shakti, the covering potency. Why would Krishna want to cover his eternal servants so that they forget him? Why would he want to do that? Okay, we can understand he wants us to remember. He gives us knowledge so that we can carry on the path and overcome obstacles, but why would he want us to forget? Let's see who knows. Okay.
That the soul can choose to come back to him rather than just becoming, you know.
Well, this is true. This is a philosophical answer, but you're dancing around the you haven't given the answer to the question. Why is he covering you? Why is he covering everybody in Melbourne and only a handful of people are here? That's the question. Yes.
Krishna wants you to surrender first.
First you surrender, then I uncover? Perhaps. Yes?
Krishna is fulfilling our desires.
He's fulfilling our desires. You want to act independently of me? You want to enjoy material nature? Well, I'll make you forget that you're spiritual so that you can enjoy fully. And or you can perceive that you're enjoying. It's only a perception. You're not really enjoying because there is no enjoyment in the material energy. It's inert. inert, all this material energy. It's asat, it's temporary. Achit, insentient. And nirananda, there's no emotion, no feeling. And when people are in that mentality, asat, everything they do is on the temporary platform. Achit, full of ignorance. And nirananda, full of stress and anxiety. Because there's no bliss there. No knowledge there. That's material energy. And the spiritual energy is sat, eternal, chit, full of knowledge, and ananda, full of bliss. So it's only a perception. So we're not the sufferers. But everyone is suffering in the material realm, thinking that they're enjoying. So if you're suffering, but you're thinking and you're enjoying, what's the Sanskrit word for that? Well, that's the Sanskrit word for a person who's acting like that. What's the Sanskrit word for when you think one thing, but it's actually something else? Illusion. What's the Sanskrit word for that?
Maya.
They think they're enjoying, but they're actually suffering. So we preach to them that you're not the sufferer. You're the enjoyer. But you can only enjoy when you're connected to the supreme enjoyer, Sri Krishna. So this is our philosophy. Janmadyasya yataha is the first aphorism. Adhato brahma jigyasa. Now let us inquire into what is the meaning? What is spirit? Janmadyasya yataha. Then everything manifests from the Supreme. And then the next one is anandamayo vyasa. Everything that manifests from the Supreme is full of ananda. Every living entity is full of ananda. And when we get this knowledge, Raja Vidyam, this topmost knowledge, Raja Guyam, this most confidential knowledge, Pavitram, the purest knowledge, Uttamam, the topmost transcendental knowledge, then Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam, we get direct perception from within the heart that we're actually spirit, soul, and Krishna's God. And that's what happened to me. All of a sudden the delight just went on, bing, and I understood. Because I was starting the process. I was getting purified to the extent that Krishna allowed me to understand. And I remember that day. Wow. All of a sudden I got it. I didn't get it up to that. 6 months of associating with the devotees and I didn't get it. And then just one day, bing, the light went on and I understood. And up to that time, I wasn't chanting Hare Krishna. I was doing everything else, but I wasn't chanting the mantra. Because I couldn't understand that the mantra was transcendental. Maybe it wasn't explained to me properly or whatever, but I couldn't grasp how chanting Hare Krishna would make a difference. It's just a sound. And also, I was a little bit intimidated. Well, what you do is we have these beads here. It's 108 beads, and you chant this mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. On each of these beads, and you do it 108 times, and you do that 16 times. Oh my God. I was intimidated. How can I do that? But then, after Krishna gave me that understanding, I said, well, let me try it. I remember I just sat down nicely, like this, because I was a meditator. I sat down, got the bead bag. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Well, first I looked at my watch, right? I was wondering, how long is this going to take me? So I looked at my watch.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, like that. Then I kept chanting, my eyes were closed, just like that. And all of a sudden I came to the end, to the Krishna bead, and I was told, you don't cross over it. You turn the beads around and go back. So I opened my eyes, looked at my watch. Oh, it was only 10 minutes. That's not so bad. So let me do one more. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then I finished that round. Two rounds, the very first day. 20 minutes had passed. I was thinking that wasn't so intimidating after all. So the next day I thought, let me see if I can do double. Let me see if I can do four. So the next day I did four. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. 40 minutes. But that wasn't so difficult. It's kind of nice. So then the next day I thought, I wonder if I could do eight. Let me try eight. I sat down really nicely, closed my eyes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then the day after that I did 16, and then I was just on the 16. 2, 4, 8, 16, 4 days. And then I began to sing, I began to put a melody to it instead of just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. I'd be going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Different melodies. I don't know if it was exactly that melody, because that was like, you know, 37 years ago. But some melody I was put into it. And then because I was chanting, Krishna gave me more and more understanding and more remembrance of my situation, that I'm actually eternal spirit soul. So he's the regulator of a perception. Sarvasya chahamriti sannivishto matta smritir gyanam apohanam cha. From me comes the knowledge, from me comes remembrance, and also if you want to enjoy matter, if you want to try and exploit material energy, I cover you. The forgetful Shakti, the Apohan Shakti, also comes from me. So thus the mind is manifested, our minds are manifested variously throughout the threefold designations of the gunas, and the threefold designations of Adibhuta, Adiatmic, and Adidaivic. Adiatmic means that I experience the pains and pleasures of the material energy. Adiatmic means from other living entities. Sometimes people speak nice to me, sometimes they don't speak nice to me. Well, no, adiatmic is my mind, I'm sorry. So adiatmic is my mind. Sometimes my mind is peaceful, sometimes my mind is disturbed. Sometimes my mind takes me on a very wonderful movie. I'm the director of the movie in my mind, and I go through this whole film, and it's worked, you know, with a happy ending. And sometimes I write a really sad script, and I'm going through the struggle, and I'm the victim. And it's, you know, I guess my mind takes me on these journeys. So then adibhutik means other living entities. Other living entities means that I get happiness, someone is very sweet to me, very kind for me, or I suffer because I go to India and there's mosquitoes biting me. And adidaivik, sometimes it's a beautiful sunny day and I feel good, and sometimes it's bitter cold. Sometimes there's a drought, sometimes there's a flood. So like this, I'm influenced by these threefold designations. But in the fourth factor, the topmost factor, Turiya, the transcendental factor, which exists separately from all this, is the absolute truth, the expansion of Sri Krishna that is in our heart, known as Paramatma or Kirodakshayi Vishnu. Paramatma's in our heart and he's always speaking to us. But we don't listen. We don't listen. Now, how many people have had this experience? You may be going somewhere or you're doing something, right? Think about it, if you've had this experience. And all of a sudden, a little voice says, do like this or go here. And then you think about it. You analyze the situation and you come up with a better idea. No, I'll go here instead or I'll do this instead. And then later on, you realize, oops, I should have listened to that first voice. How many people have had that experience? Everybody. So that first voice, who is that first voice? So I began to analyze it and I noticed that the first voice was always right. And then when I analyzed it more and more, I realized that I only know that the first voice is right when I get to the future. Once I get to the future, then I realize I made a mistake and the first voice was right. So then I was thinking, well, I don't know who that voice is. I don't know where it's coming from, but whoever it is, or wherever it's coming from, that voice knows the future. Because when I get to the future, I see that it was right. But in the present, when I analyze it, using all my information and knowledge of the present, doesn't seem to be logical, and I come up with my own idea, which is logical for the present, but when I get to the future, then I realize that I was wrong. So who is that voice? Who can see the future? So at least I realize that, you know, only Krishna sees the future, past, present, and future, three colored God. So then I began to realize that this is Paramatma. It's guiding us. But we don't listen. And I was in two situations where I almost died because I didn't listen to that voice. And at the last second, when I should have been dead, I called out, help, Krishna save me. And Krishna saved me. That's when I really took it seriously. When I realized that, like, wow, Krishna saved my life. So then I had to train myself to hear that voice. Train myself that when I hear that voice, I don't analyze it, I just follow it. And that wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. But what happened was, I would not follow and I'd come up with my own idea and then I'd realize, oops, I'm supposed to follow them, you know. And the time period between when I realized it became less and less. Like a couple of minutes later, oh, what? No. Forget my idea. Let's just follow the voice. Like that. So it took some time. So if someone speaks to you and you never listen to them, will they carry on speaking to you? If you're speaking to someone and they're never listening, and you just say, okay, that's it. Give up on this person, they're hopeless, isn't it? If someone doesn't care to hear what you have to say, then you don't have conversations with them. But if you approach someone and everything you say, they're all ears, really? Wow, okay, fantastic. Oh, I'm so glad you told me that. Then you're encouraged. Wow, I like this person. You know, you always speak to them. So it's the same with Krishna, isn't it? We don't listen to Krishna, then Krishna figures, oh, well. But still, he's there guiding you in different situations where you really need to be guided. And still we may not listen, but at least Krishna feels, you know, I want to do this. But what happens when you start listening to Krishna? What happens when you start listening to a person? They want to speak to you more and more, isn't it? So the same with Krishna. Oh, he's listening to me. Great. Well, how about this? Do this. Go here. Do that. So Prabhupada was completely in tune with Paramatma. This is called Paramatma Realized. When Paramatma said, go here, Prabhupada went there. When Prabhupada Paramatma said, do this, Prabhupada did that. When Paramatma said, say this, Prabhupada said that. That's why Prabhupada could do no wrong. Because the person who saw the future was guiding him. Now, if someone could see the future and say, that horse race tomorrow, this horse is going to win. I guarantee it. You take all your savings, put it on the horse, and you win. If you know the future, right? So Prabhupada knew the future. Now, how do we know that Prabhupada knew the future? Well, this happened. In our Vancouver temple in Canada, it was Janmashtami, it was a big celebration, and there was a lot of advertising and everything. And one gentleman happened by and he saw that, you know, everything was going on. He came in, checked it out. The devotees were very nice, you know, had to take some prasad. So nice, glad you came and everything. Brought him into the temple room. Saw the deities, and he turned around and he saw Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasa side. He says, I know that gentleman. Really? How's that? Well, many, many years ago, I used to live in New York. 1966. And I used to walk in Central Park. And I would see this gentleman dressed in his saffron robes. He would also go there for walks. And one day, I saw him sitting on the park bench. And I thought he looked like he was from India. So I came up and said, do you mind if I sit with you? He said, no, please. So I sat down with him. And I asked him, are you from India? He said, yes, I'm from India. What are you doing in America? He says, I've come here on the order of my Guru Maharaj. I have a great mission that I'm fulfilling. Tell me about your mission. Oh, it is a very vast, wonderful mission. I have so many temples and filled with devotees, and we have schools. And Prabhupada, you know, explained everything to him. And then he said, and it's only separated by time. Prabhupada told him everything and said, it's only separated by time. He told that story. So Prabhupada knew the future. Krishna just told him, said, go do this, this is all going to happen. Trust me. Master Jahat, don't have any doubts. Trust me. And that's what happened. Prabhupada told us that when he was born, and his parents had called an astrologer, that's normal in India. And the astrologer came and read the chart and said, after his 70th year, he will cross the ocean and establish 108 temples of Sri Krishna. So we knew that, we heard that. So after Prabhupada left, after we regained our sanity, I grabbed the latest BTG and I counted the number of temples. It was 108. That astrologer had seen it in Prabhupada's chart. 108 temples when Prabhupada left the planet. So Prabhupada was connected to the regulator of perception, to the controller of perception, Sri Krishna. He was completely surrendered to the Lord in the heart. Paramatma realized. And he's teaching us how to do it also. How to come to that level of understanding, that level of dedication, and that level of purity by following his instructions, by chanting the Maha Mantra, by attending the programs, by taking prasadam, by associating with the devotees, by fixing our consciousness in everything that's spiritual, that is connected to Krishna. And gradually, we're losing attraction to the material energy, and we're becoming
more and more attached to the spiritual. To the spiritual energy, everything that's connected to Krishna. So we should understand that the three phases of consciousness, wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep, they're products of modes of material nature. When we're awake, it's the products of modes of material nature. When we're sleeping, we're under the influence of the modes of material nature. The subconscious mind is also under the modes of material nature. But yet we react to it, to our dreams, the same way as we would react in real life, so-called real life. Like if you're in a car accident, you almost, you know, smash, you know, you're completely shaken up. Oh my God, I almost died. But if you have that dream, you're lying in your bed and you wake up and you're just as shaken as if you were actually in the car. It's the same experience. It's all under the influence of the modes of material nature. But behind all that is Sri Krishna, the beautiful, the benevolent, the well-wisher, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Bhuktaram Yagat Jagat Tapasam. I am the actual enjoyer of all yagyas and all tapasya. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. I am the supreme controller of all other controllers, of all planets and all persons on those planets. Sudidam Sarva Bhutanam. And I am the best friend and well-wisher of every living entity in those planets. Gyatva Maam Shanti Vichati. And anyone who knows me, who can understand me, attains peace. So when Krishna says Sudidam Sarva Bhutanam, Suhrid. Su means sweet, Hrid means heart. Prabhupada translated that as the best friend or the well-wisher. But if we really want to get technical, Suhrid, he is the sweetheart of every living entity. Krishna has a sweet heart for every living entity. Now, every living entity may not be able to understand that, but we should be able to understand that. Krishna is our sweetheart. He has a sweet heart for every one of us. And we've forgotten that. But Prabhupada's trying to revive that consciousness so that we can have a sweet heart for Krishna. And when Krishna, who has a sweet heart for us, sees that we're now trying to have a sweet heart for Him and reestablish the loving relationship, then again we become sweethearts. Me and Krishna. My original beloved. He's thinking like that, and we are thinking like this also. Because each and every one of us has a unique, loving relationship with Sri Krishna, which we've forgotten. And that loving relationship that Krishna has, which each and every one of us is unique, there's nothing else like it. And Krishna's being deprived of that sweetness of that loving relationship because we have not been interested. We're holding back on Krishna for these millions of births. And now we're finally coming round saying, you know, actually Krishna, I was wrong. I was looking for happiness. I was looking for love in all the wrong places. And now I really want to come back to you. And you know what Krishna does when he hears that? You know what he does when he hears that? He smiles. Oh. And he's so happy to take you into his embrace. So, becoming Krishna conscious means coming into the embrace of Krishna. Again. And this is the only thing that satisfies us. Nothing else is ever going to satisfy us. So this is the process. So the fourth factor, Turiya, the transcendental factor, which exists separately from all this material manifestation, from all the gunas, from
wakeful consciousness, from sleep consciousness, from deep sleep consciousness, from everything else. Behind all this is Sri Krishna, the transcendental, beautiful, who alone constitutes the absolute truth, who alone is our beloved. And the whole goal of Krishna consciousness is to reunite, revive that loving relationship. Prabhupada uses the word revive. Revive means that I fainted, I'm unconscious. Wake up, wake up. You pour water on their head, or you know, try to bring them back to waking consciousness. That's called being revived. Lord Chaitanya is trying to revive us too. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole. Lord Chaitanya is calling, wake up, sleeping souls, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. So let's come out of that sleeping condition and share it with others. This will please Krishna. Because sharing means caring. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions? Yes?
I actually had a series of questions about Prabhupada that I was going to ask, but we're running out of time now, so I'll save it to the next class. Thank you very much for a wonderful, wonderful
class. A series of questions. Now everybody's really curious. You're going to leave us hanging like that?
Well,
just try, let's get one of them at least.
Well, you mentioned the Prabhupada, and he had his letters, the books, his letters, the 108 temples, his letters, the whole Ponti. But what I was more...
And it was only separated by time in 1966. He saw it all. Krishna revealed it all.
So that's wonderful you explained that. But what I wanted to know more on the material level with this, although he wasn't on the material level, but every day while he was doing all those things, setting up those temples, and being the utmost president of all the presidents, because he was running the whole, United...
He was running the whole show. Well, no, during Mangal Arati he was translating.
No, he wasn't translating.
No, he was always translating. The first time we saw him was at 6 a.m. when he'd come out for his morning walk. For Prabhupada, every Arati was Mangal. Every Arati was auspicious. But he was training us up to be yogis. Get up early, get up before the sun. He was training us up. And he trained us up in so many ways. But his ultimate instruction was to become Krishna conscious and go back home, back to Krishna. That was his mission. Come to planet Earth, gather as many conditioned souls as possible, purify them, and bring them back to Krishna. And the more of us that go back home, back to Godhead, the more glorified Prabhupada is that he brought so many souls back to Krishna's lotus feet. And as Prabhupada himself said, there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita, so many translations of Bhagavad Gita, but not one of them ever made a Krishna devotee. So that was his gift to Krishna, to come here and bring back the conditioned souls. Unconditioned, because when we go back, we're no longer conditioned. And that's the greatest thing we can do for Prabhupada, is to come to the spiritual platform, come out of the conditioning. Then his mission was a success. And as long as we're still under the modes of material nature, from his point of view, he was unsuccessful. This is a story he told us. He said, "My Guru Maharaj," which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whenever one of his disciples left the mission, he would cry. Tears would come to his eyes and he would say, "I couldn't save him."
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would express his failure. If someone left the mission, which was not Bhaktisiddhanta's fault, someone said, that's it, I'm out of here. But Bhaktisiddhanta would take it as his failure. I couldn't save him. Tears would come to his eyes. So let's not put Prabhupada in that situation. Let's not leave. Let's be fixed up so that tears don't have to come to his eyes, that he was a failure. He was a great success, and we have to prove it by becoming pure devotees. Yeah, you had a...
This is when we have, when we hear all the predictions of Asatara, so you can understand that the chanting of Hare Krishna really sounded good.
Right, even in the village of Melbourne, they're chanting now. Because 500 years ago, it was a village. It was an Aborigine village. Okay.
I was just wondering, so when we go out and preach, whether we do for a program, how do we maintain the confidence that even though we don't get the immediate result that we wanted, you know, it might take an effect on our confidence to go out again?
Well, you're not entitled to the fruit of the action. Fight for the sake of fighting, Krishna says to Arjuna, but don't be attached to the result. So we're going out blissfully chanting, and the effect will be there or not be there. That's not why we're doing it. That's karmakanda. I do something, I want to see a result. That's karmakanda. We're not into karmakanda understanding. We're going out there, sharing our bliss and trying to share it with others, but everyone's an individual. They have freedom of choice to accept or reject. But we know in the back of our minds that the sound vibration is so purifying that everyone's going to become purified. Now, we don't know how conditioned a person is. It may take, you know, lifetimes of hearing before that. Or it could be someone who's just on the verge. You remember last Friday when we went out chanting? There was all of a sudden a girl appeared out of nowhere with dreadlocks and bare feet.
She was dancing really well.
And then she just joined it and started dancing, and she was in the whole Harinam for the whole couple of hours. She was there. Then she disappeared. That woman is ready to be a devotee, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're not the controllers, but we're the facilitators, you know. Krishna's using us to help, you know, facilitate people becoming pure and so on. We shouldn't be in the mood, if I don't get a result, then I'm a failure. And that's ridiculous. Okay. We're not result oriented. Although Prabhupada likes results, but we're focused on doing the service, and we leave the result up to Krishna. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, right. And Krishna is the time factor. This we've already discussed previously. Krishna is the time factor. I am the destroyer of all the worlds. All right, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.